Welcome back to Peep Trails. It's your boy Mohammed and Shamaki. Today joined by a very special guest. So an author. We need to bit another bit more because we just met the brother. So we've got the book there, Privatized Mandem here. And then the author Nabil. Thank you very much for coming on.
No, I appreciate you.
So yeah, we'll just go straight into it. Like, just tell us a bit about this. Actually, let me start with this. So us, like, why we started this podcast originally. So we used to read a lot, like, back in the day when we were young, right? And then, yeah, we just kind of fell off, as most people do. You go through school, and then school's the only place you read, and you don't really like it, you know? So, like back in the day, we wanted to get back into writing as well, innit? So, like, both of us were writing novels, like, both of us. Man. So, like, yeah, that was, like, late teens, yeah. And then, we thought, like, let's start a podcast where we read more, to get like more ideas. Like, we tried to branch out into different like types of reading as well, like autobiographies, fiction, non-fiction, like, different types of genres as well within those areas. And then yeah, we kind of just like moved into like more creative stuff, because like I've been doing like graphic design freelance for a few years. Now I work in IT, so it's a bit different environment. But both of us wanted to be like full-time creatives, you know? So like this is kind of a place where we bring in creatives, bring in people that have interesting stories to tell, and like, yeah, kind of see where we can inspire people. So the brand itself is called Inspire. So yeah, we try to kind of inspire people with the stories that we hear, and then hopefully ourselves as well, so we can push that into our creativity and whatever we produce, you know. Both boys from North London, as you know, we just said.
Beautiful.
So yeah,
now Northwest.
Northwest.
There's a difference between North and Northwest.
He really claims that. We grew up together. We grew up together. Yeah. So, like, what year did you move?
Well, from there.
Yeah.
2017.
Yeah, 2017. You moved to Halston, didn't it?
Yeah.
That's what he started changing from there.
Yeah, man.
He's ours now. Nah, he's a Northwest man.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. That's where it's at, though, man.
Bro,
I'll be honest.
That's what he says.
North is now. When I think about it, it's kind of shocking. It actually is, you know what I mean? But like Northwest is, it's like, it's vibrant, the connections are lovely,
yeah,
to go anywhere, you know.
Northwest is popping, man.
It is.
I can't lie to you.
That's the thing.
Might as well leave.
Nah, that's
leave.
Not, that's not North first of all.
We'll welcome you with open arms, my bro.
I really don't want that. But yeah, like when he moved, like, oh, we are making jokes for days, you know, like non-stop, like Halston,
out of all places.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, there's a lot of misconceptions around.
We're gonna have to be talking about this kind of stuff.
That's why I need you here for.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions, fam. Yeah. If you come to Halston, the place is culturally rich.
Damn right.
Yeah, and like, fam, you'll find ingredients in Halston that you won't find anywhere else in London.
When you say ingredients,
I'm talking about actual like
seasoning, yeah?
Food.
Yeah,
I'm talking about like stuff that our parents cook with. You won't find in North London, my bro. What are you talking about?
Would you even find paprika?
Yeah.
Oh, easy.
Where you got no paprika?
We're lucky to have salt and pepper. We got the sauce.
Himalayan salt, that's what we have.
Yeah, damn, brother.
That's what I'm saying.
I didn't say I live in bloody Mill Hills. I think like I live in Watford or something, bro. Nah, but yeah, man. So you've published your book. So like, I want to hear a bit about you. Like obviously now we know where you grew up.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell us a bit about like how you ended up, what do you do today? How you ended up being there?
Yeah.
And like what inspired you to write the book as well?
Before we get into that,
mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to how you even came across the book, and then I'll tell you a little bit about myself.
So like, we've been trying to
flip the whole script.
I had to,
this is my podcast.
He's a captain. He's a captain now.
He's a privatized podcast. But so like, I told you before that we had been in contact with the brother Abdi from Coffee Afrique, right?
Yeah.
So like, because we've been trying to get
up Abdi.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
Good brother, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been trying to get different types of guests on as well. Like, so we got like had a random different guest last season. Like, so this is the new season. Mm. So yeah, we literally had like, we've had authors on last season. We've had, what was it, Rafaro?
Yeah.
Like a guy that became popular from a meme.
More than that,
obviously.
Like, but
originally, like, he became
a meme guy.
Nah, he was
a bit more credit.
Do you remember Big Jimmy Jones from the Jailhouse?
Yeah, bro.
That's a big guy.
That's not just
because he's from North, you know?
Yeah.
He's these North man know.
Yeah, we're bringing on lots of different people, and then we were trying to get Coffee Afrikan for a while, but he's just busy, innit?
Fam, because he's frontline, fam.
Yeah, nah, he's serious. He's serious.
He's one of the people I can say is doing the work in East London, frontline. Every single day I'm seeing him out there, man. Yeah. Like the amount of respect and admiration I have for Abdi, like, is it this camera? Large up Abdi, every single day of the week, man. He's phenomenal, honestly. People like me write about stuff, talk about stuff.
Don't say that,
Abdi's,
man.
Out here,
bruv. Yeah, front line,
fam. Front line, fam. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, if there's any introduction, if it was through him, I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful, and I feel like it's a good place to start.
Yeah, I think because he heard, because we're all Somali, right? So yeah. He heard about us from, I think he just seen our clips or whatever. Mm. So he kind of knew what kind of stuff we were on, right? So yeah, he was like, I just asked him, like, do you know anyone else that could be an interesting guest? And he was like, yo, check out Nabil here.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, say no more. And I reached out. And you're saying you're writing a thesis in November.
Oh yeah, I completed my thesis.
So tell us about yourself. Like, what do you do now and all that stuff?
So, in case you didn't catch it, my name's Nabil. I was born in Iraq. Mm-hmm. I came to the UK when I was two. So I'm an immigrant. I'm from Northwest London. I'm 28 years old. I'm from the Chalkhill Estate, which is in Wembley. And I'm sure you know about the Chalkhill Estate. It's one of the biggest estates in the borough. And I grew up like anyone else did. But Northwest London and London in general has been changing quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So like you can see cranes everywhere. You can see towers popping up. And like that's something I've seen my whole life.
Yeah.
And it's always been of interest to me. Now I am, in terms of how the book...
Excuse me, so like when you came here, were you living in that estate from the jump? Do you remember?
So when we first landed, because we came as refugees.
Yeah.
When we first landed, I think it was temporary accommodation first.
Yeah.
And then...
Where was that?
It was in West London.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember the place. I can't remember. Cool. But I know first accommodation we was given was council housing in Hounslow
okay.
West.
Okay.
The Meadows Estate.
Okay.
I went back there the other day.
How long were you there for?
I was there for like, I was there until 2002. So I came to the UK in 97.
Yeah.
So I was there so like 5 years. And it was an experience.
Yeah.
Obviously these times, if you ever visit the Meadows Estate, it's these massive concrete blocks. Yeah, with like green spaces in between. Now you don't really know what you're in. Mm-hmm. So like, as I'm playing about, I'm like, yo, this is my castle. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can run through these blocks like it's nothing. And I'm safe because all my neighbors know me. Mm. All the neighbors know my mum. Like the way it was designed, like police didn't really harass us as kids, and we were too young for police to bully us anyway. It was only when I moved to Northwest London and I got a little bit older, got a bit of hairs on my chin, I started to...
You Iraqi boys,
early, 12 years old?
Yeah, by 12, you could see that. Once
you got out of temporary accommodation.
I moved to the Chalkhill Estate in 2002, October. And that's really when a lot of my vivid memories exist.
Start being conscious of them.
Yeah. And I loved it, bro. I can't lie. Like, multicultural London.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my aunties weren't just Iraqi. I had Nigerian aunties. I had Jamaican uncles. I had Afghani, like, cousins. Like, I had people from all over the world, all the diaspora. And growing up from a young age, you sort of take in people's cultures. And really, it's only in places like London where we can have sentences like Wagwan Ma'ak. Different cultures, different languages, different all together. I think it's a beautiful thing. I can't lie.
100%.
That was my block. Mm-hmm. Like, My block's known for having a lot of like Jamaicans, Congolese, Somalis, and like a lot of sauce comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sauce.
A tasty sauce.
Trust me, man. There's a particular way that Northwest people are, and I 100% I'd attribute it to the way we was raised. Mm-hmm. I learned English from my brethren. Mm-hmm. My mum came to the UK at quite like in her 20s, mm-hmm. so like she had to learn English,
yeah,
like that's the same time as me, do you
yeah,
get?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm very much a product of my environment, a product of my neighbors and my people.
Yeah, it's funny because we were just talking about it before in the previous episode, because we were talking about sacrifice, and like the ending note we had was about like what's the biggest sacrifice to you personally, like yeah, for both of us, like like families moving for the sake of you, like that's like is a crazy sacrifice, and like like it's really difficult to, I don't think there's no way we can really pay that back in our lifetime, you know,
especially like, coming into a whole different country, don't know the language, a whole new system of life, and you barely have family members out there, you know, and then but you just have that hope that your kid's gonna come out of it and, you know, I mean, sort something out. But it's interesting because it's especially in a state like that, a lot of the other families are essentially in the same kind of predicament.
But, yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And because of that sort of closed environment, you kind of feel like this is your world. This is just everyday life. It is normal. And I think it's very hard for, on the exterior, an estate always looks very like gloomy and unwelcoming. And you know mm-hmm. what I mean? I feel like the way you're describing it now, when you're saying like it feels like a castle, you know what I mean? Like we're into our fantasy novels and stuff like that.
Nah, but kids are imaginative.
Imaginative, you know what I mean? That's like it's attributing a lot of positive words to an estate that usually it's never attributed to.
So on that, we these are the innocent thoughts of a YG, basically.
Yeah.
The reason why the narrative changes is you learn how to read and you start to see what the papers are saying about the place that you come from.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, every single day you're told, yo, like, this place is full of yobs. Yob as in a backward boy, yeah. Or thugs, or like drug dealers and killers and gangbangers. And I'm like, yo, like, Auntie Patricia's not a
gangbanger.
She's not a gangbanger, bro.
Yeah.
She's the sweetest lady.
Yeah.
Like, she's nicer than you, bro.
Yeah,
like,
100%. So, if anyone's saying that.
Fam. And you start to question yourself, like, because if I'm a product of this place and this place is accused to produce these undesirables, does that mean I'm that? Does that mean I'm a person of bad character?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Especially when we strive to be to be good people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how much you try to be a good person, there's a narrative out there that says, yo, like you're just the riffraff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And more time, like a lot of us as impressionable young people, we accept these narratives.
Yeah.
And when you're sort of exposed to these narratives every single day, irrespective of your behavior, irrespective of your attempt to be better, you're still labeled.
Yeah.
You then start to wear the shoes that's made for you.
Yeah.
Because of the exhaustion, we're human beings and we're impressionable people. Impressionable people. So. I think it's very important that I provide another narrative, or provide new shoes for my people to wear, shoes that I know actually fits them, and labeling that I know them to be, because really, once you take a step back and you just do a quick assessment as to who's creating these narratives and who's writing these papers and who's labeling you. You might not really step foot in the bits once in your life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And more time, you come from a particular background with a particular worldview.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that we're the easy targets.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, cool, I'll just combat your narrative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, that's, I was just going to follow up on that in terms of, because I feel like, especially building a narrative around thing, estates and stuff like that. Like, for example, like, we didn't necessarily grow up in the state, but we're very much, because we are immigrants, diaspora, we, there is that connection between, it doesn't really have to be confined in that area. At the end of the day, we'll still be looked at like immigrants. Whereas if shows come about, like, for example, like Top Boy, I feel like playing the devil's advocate.
Go on. This is his favorite.
No, do it.
Yeah, wait. Just to make the convo interesting. You know? But I feel like, for example, a kid that watches Top Boy, right? Because now you've got kids that are not even from London, out of London, just wearing, like, trying to be road, even though they have no kind of need to kind of be it. So then they're watching stuff like, for example, like Top Boy and this and that, and so many of those narratives is kind of like from the blocks or communities and hubs, like that's how they kind of phrase it and do it, of people that are bringing up young kids and giving them bags and telling them to shot here and telling them to shot that and stuff like that. So it's like, but that's hitting mainstream media, and kids in America are seeing it, kids around the UK are seeing it. There isn't how do you feel like, how would you combat someone that's, that his first impression of a block is this foreboding big place where they give kids drugs to peddle for
the oldest? Let me just ask a question before you answer. So are you talking about from the impression of us as people from these areas? Or are you talking about...
No.
I'm not talking about young people. I'm talking about like adults and people that already have their own minds and their own ways of thinking. You know, like, are you talking about like some random... guys no, I'm thinking about like in Nottingham or something.
Not even just in people in Nottingham. People in London, like, I think the estate has an impression that people have when they think of the estate, and most of the time it's not positive, and a lot of the time it is pushed by shows like, for example, Top Boy.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, how would you then combat that?
So, all right, firstly, that's not devil's advocate. That's an observation.
Yeah.
Because I think if we put things into context, our stories have never been told.
Yeah.
And until before the noughties, we were always, as in the communities from ends, have always been painted as like, oh, they're just savages.
Yeah.
That's just the way they are.
Yeah.
Without an explanation as to like why certain things happen the way that they do. And so you get the emergence of stories. Finally, we're able to tell stories that explains or almost justifies what the violence that people are seeing. So, for example, Bullet Boy, Kid Uphood, and your Top Boys. These are stories that provides the context and almost humanizes people to show, I guess, wider audiences that actually people aren't born and then get given a belly and a strap and it's like, it's not a conveyor belt system like that. there's a series of circumstances and pressures that people experience that lead them to do certain things, which is what I feel like Top Boy does well. I feel like Blue Story does better. I think Kid Uphood and these other stories, yes, they don't contribute to painting a true narrative of what it's like to be in ends. Because, bro, in ends, there's love stories.
Yeah.
But no one really writes about the love stories. Mm. So you got to ask yourself, why is the gangbanging movies more popular than the love stories coming out of ends? One of my favorite films of all time is Attack the Block.
Yeah, bro.
Even though it's not the best written film, and the script is a little bit, but like, yo, that's a sci-fi. Yeah. That's a sci-fi film about aliens coming.
Hood classic, though.
I love it. For the first time, it's not about a YG from a single parent household who's selling drugs to make ends meet, which is a story that's been done to death. It's an important story to tell. But it's not the story. Bro, I know bare people in ends who every Jum'ah they go prayer, and they're the most like, they're on deen, bro. What do you mean weed? Astaghfirullah, my guy. Like, do you know what I mean? And I know Donnie's from ends who are as G'd up as the rappers, but now I'm going to church on Sunday.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And they work in IT. And they're not really concerned with, like, that's what ENDS is. ENDS is a collection of people. It's not all one person.
Yeah, do you get? Of course.
And so I think there's, sometimes we do ourselves a disservice because we allow other people to tell our stories for us.
Yeah.
Top Boy, who's the writers?
Yeah.
What does the writing room look like?
Yeah.
Because I doubt it's all people from ENDS.
No, I think there was, the reason why I even brought that up was because I think there was even another kind of commission for Top Boy, but it was going to be written by another white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were saying, come on now, like, it's time to let someone else kind of tell the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, for example, I think you said a great point where there's love in, of course there's going to be love in the community because
look how many people, look how many babies there
are. No, but it is, but it's like, it's always kind of like, if the backdrop of a state is used, it's always something madness is going
it's
on.
It's death.
It's never, yeah, it's death.
That's the thing. It's always,
it's never like, oh, from here, this was made, or these people came together, or this kind of, you know what I mean?
That's the funny thing, yeah. Let me just make one quick point. Like, there was like a little popular Twitter thread that people were talking about how Sully and what's the other guy's name? DeShane. I know that DeShane and DeShane. Yeah, how are they like doing this for all these years and they're still broke? Yeah, and like they're still struggling at it. But then you deeper as well, like the consequences of all of this stuff that they're going through. That's also a very important thing that they actually showed, and they've shown in every season. Mm-hmm. Like that, no one's making it out. No one's made it out consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that have made it out, they're back in there straight, like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like the consequences, I think that's being shown very well. When people see that, they're not going to say, yo, like the majority of people won't say, yo, I want to do that. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So yeah, that's why I feel like the answering to that point as well.
I also had another interesting topic. This one is kind of a point that was made by Reggie Yates that I kind of didn't really agree with. I forgot who he was talking to, but it was like an interview. But I feel like you'd be able to break it down a lot better than I could. But essentially it was kind of like, you know, when someone, it feels very like coin terming and this and that, so, but like, you know, making it from the ends, right? And then some people unfortunately go down that bad path, and it doesn't necessarily, they don't necessarily have to be from the ends to go down a bad path. Anyone can go down there, but just on the context of that, and he was talking to someone, and then they were like, oh yeah, this guy did this, and then he ended up killing someone, doing life, and all this kind of stuff here. Yeah. And then Reggie was kind of taking moments to ponder upon this, and he was like, yeah, but I came from the estates, but I didn't take this path. Mm-hmm. So why is this person taking this kind of route? You know what I mean? And I was, it kind of like, in a way, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because it's kind of like, it doesn't look at the history of like the socioeconomic and all these kind of different problems that occur. And I just kind of wanted you to break that down a bit.
So firstly, I have a lot of admiration for Reggie Yates. Never met him, but I have a lot of admiration for him. I think one thing that we struggle with as people, forget about people from ENDS, as people, is self-awareness and an understanding that all it really takes is one bad day for someone's life to go left, or one bad decision. And it's also, some will say things are maktub, others will say it's probability. Mm. Either way, I think the whole, if I can do it, you can do it situation is very self-centered. And not in a negative way, I'm not criticizing, but there's a lack of self-awareness that maybe things lined up for you in a particular type of way because of reasons. Some, again, probability or it's maktub, and you manage to swerve certain things that a lot of people experience. And like, for instance, I got a couple guys I've lost to the system, a couple guys I've lost to the soil. I don't think I'm special.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just so happened that I managed to wiggle my way through.
Yeah.
through circumstance.
Yeah, I'll get caught up in it.
Because we're in places of high pressure.
Mm.
People need to understand that the way things are set up, especially in Britain, they are set up against us.
Mm.
And for us to make it out is a blessing. I think maybe there was a lapse in judgment in what you were saying. Like from a very young age, he was working.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? With the BBC and whatnot. Yeah. And so like that comes with its advantages.
Yeah.
A lot of people at his age when he started working, like Marjay probably was working two jobs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there are some things that are, we can't really apply our own conditions to other people's lives is unfair.
Mm. Mm.
You know, sometimes as well, like in interview situations as well, like you can say something that you might later regret because like maybe you didn't think it through properly.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
We know very well as podcasts.
Like, I'll keep it a buck of you. I have so much love and respect for Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah. And his knife crime campaign, I'm supportive of.
Oh, yeah.
But there are some narratives that, we're talking about a complex issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are some narratives that's being peddled like, why do you go get a job? And that's the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, bro, I'll keep a buck with you if it was that easy.
Yeah. And furthermore, if you was to get a job and you didn't like it, then that might drive him back further.
Bro, because there's some real life discussions, uncomfortable discussions
mm-hmm.
that we're not willing to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, why would I go work for £12 an hour when I can make two bags a week?
Mm.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And like,
and be with your boys as well the whole time.
Be with my boys, work my own hours.
Yeah.
Brother, and it comes with clout.
Yeah.
I wear my own uniform. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have
no 28 days holiday.
But holiday whenever you want. but also, the fact that, forget the sort of selfish aspect of it, what personal gain you can get. What if your mother's actually got like
struggling.
Five kids, bro?
Yeah.
And the council's on her, bro.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people who love to talk from the outside, they ain't never seen a bailiff in their life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and rent arrears, packing
fam,
up.
Fam.
Telling you you're kicked out the yard.
So for some people, it's a decision between dignity for my family
mm-hmm.
or like we're struggling
yeah.
and my mum's going to have to go ask for money. So it's complex, bro.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Especially, and then if a kid gets 500 or something and it helps with,
fam,
then it's like,
you're telling me you're giving me a pinky note just to drop this thing off.
Just to, yeah.
Say no more.
Yeah.
It's
or complex. Like 500 a week as a kid.
Fam.
Like as a young buck.
So I'm not advocating again.
Absolutely.
I'm
not. We're not.
Stay in school and don't do any of that stuff.
I hate crunching the numbers, you know.
But my point is there are complexities that current narratives fail to understand or fail to address.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
The whole just go get a job thing isn't going to work. There are more high level stuff that people just aren't talking about. Or aren't bringing to light that not justifies but sets, creates an environment for violence to happen, for knife crime to happen. Change the environment. Don't expect a youth to change.
Yeah.
A youth's a product of the environment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So change up the environment.
Which is why you wrote the book. But let's just like,
I forgot about that.
Go back to you forgot about it. Let's just go back to like you growing up. So, all right, cool. Mm-hmm. So you grew up in Northwest.
I went to school his side.
Yeah. So you went to school at Harlesden, yeah?
Yeah.
How was that experience for you? Like, what led you to get to the point where you are? What do you do now? Let's get to the book now.
So growing up, even through like my adolescent years,
mm-hmm.
I was always in Enns.
Yeah.
My school was in Chalk Hill. My primary school was in Neasden. My my secondary school was in Harsden, and like I didn't really leave Northwest too tough. So I thought everywhere was blocks.
Yeah.
I thought everywhere was ends, yeah. Do you get? And so like everyone's living the same.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's beautiful. I can eat jollof one day and I can have a patty the next day. Like it's multiculturalism. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to college. I went to college in Harrow. Bro.
Different world.
Different world. I was like, these lot are living different.
Yeah.
These men, they're in college, they're not wearing the same clothes twice.
Okay. That is different.
Yeah. Well,
I went to like a pretty well off secondary school there.
Yeah.
I saw one guy in year 8, he had a 2K watch on. And I was like, yo.
Bro.
Yeah.
What do you know about
it? I was like a proper Mannery.
No, but what do you know about the autumn winter season switch up with the spring summer season? Fam,
yeah,
you see my thing? If I'm buying something, I'm holding that for 3 years.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah, that's a decade thing.
That's a decade thing, bro. I bought these shoes back in 2014. I'm joking, I didn't. But I started to rub shoulders with people who lived a completely different lifestyle, and they had a completely different worldview. And it was a culture shock for me. Mm. And I started to hear the narratives that we knew the newspapers were nonsense.
Yeah.
But to us, it was like one journalist in the office trying to write sensationalist stuff. And it was the feds. They're the only people that didn't like us. And then more and more, I started to realize, your average Joe in Harrow actually believes the ends is full of killers.
Yeah.
Because when I told him I'm from Chalkhill, that how did he get here?
Yeah.
I was like, man, I went to school like you. And
yeah.
My grades were actually quite good, man. Got 9 A's. Like, don't do that.
Yeah, they're coming to you.
You shouldn't be here.
For your help.
Like, so, and I experienced that everywhere. I experienced that to this day. As a 28-year-old man, and I work in a professional environment to this day.
Likewise.
Fam.
There's some interesting things as a professional that you experience as well. It's different.
So it's interesting to see like how I guess a very compelling story, a sensationalist story, can spread. It made me uncomfortable. It made me very, very uncomfortable. There wasn't anything I could really do.
Mm-hmm.
I felt quite powerless.
Yeah.
Went about my daily life. And then, but as you do, I used to listen to a lot of Link Up TV.
Yeah.
I still do. Yeah. Link Up TV, but I'm saying back then, GRM Daily, SBTV. And one guy that I noticed could sort of speak about the perspective and the experience that I was going through, noticing these weird things, was George the Poet.
Yeah.
Who's from St. Raph's.
Yeah.
He was able to really articulate the way that I felt. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something weird going on here. Mm-hmm. And he's able to make it into poetry and art and like it resonated with me. And so I would study what he would say, and you need to remember, like, this is a new experience we've been in. Like, history books doesn't really touch on the experiences that we have.
Yeah.
We're diaspora people from ex-colonies coming into the home of an ex-colonial power with like legislation that still sort of doesn't see you as human, and so you're treated in a particular type of way, so you're put in the ghetto. And
especially in the era of like we grew up without technology, and now all the technology implemented, like the housing crisis wasn't as bad before we were born, and then all of a sudden we're in there, like we've got like the dichotomy of all the issues facing us at one time.
We will get on to the housing crisis
because
that's a whole other thing.
But
I went to uni, dropped out for a bit, and I watched this video on SBTV called Authors of the Estate. It was a 15-minute video, like a little documentary thing, of one guy called Nathaniel Telemach, who's Pace or Life. That's his brand. He slotted 1,000 books on the St. Raphael's estate, And there was a voiceover of a guy called Andre Anderson who was part of the work. Now, Authors of the Estate was basically an anthology, or six people from RAFs who wanted to combat these narratives that I was talking to you guys about, like my man in a journalist's office is saying, "Wear this," but he's like, "Nah, like actually, let us write about us and show the world who we actually are." So I was like, "Rah, that's compelling. Like that's mad. Like and these times."
When was that?
This was 2015.
Okay.
So I saw the video. And look, I'm from Chalk Hill. St. Raph's is 10 minutes down the street from me. Authors don't come out of Raph's.
Yeah.
He's talking about that. Them are not right. I internalize narratives that them lot were saying about us.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, deep,
we're gangbangers, bro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're dealers, we're killers. We're not authors. That don't make sense. So that reignited something in me and recalibrated my understanding of who I was, who my neighbors were. I was at the time in my early 20s. So I ordered the book. I read it, I'm like, fam, like this, I see myself in this book. These are my neighbors. They're talking about the same experience that I grew up with. And it challenges a narrative that I was uncomfortable with. And like unconsciously, I've now adopted and internalized. So I was going through an identity crisis. Yeah. I was like, bruv, like. I read the book and it really changed my life. And I like done so much research on this guy, Andre Anderson. And he was... If I could, in a word, describe him, it's audacious.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, he had the audacity
to
combat narratives that others have placed on us.
Yeah.
Because for us...
So was he a guy that grew up in...
St. Raph's.
Okay. Yeah.
And like, but he was like, yeah, they're not saying that about us, but whatever. Mm. Like, this is who we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is, I had never seen before in my life.
Yeah.
So I, again, I go about my life. I go about my business. I'm listening to, going back to Jules the Poet. He's got a podcast series. So I'm listening to his podcast and he advertises a role in his team. I apply, I get in. And so I was with him for a substantial amount of time. And one thing we spoke about a lot was going back to the way the city is changing. And by this time, it was like 2018, we already knew about the gentrification that was happening in South Kilburn. We heard about what was going on in South London. We heard about what was going on in Somers Town and King's Cross and whatnot. So we were talking about how do we fix this?
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues here. Gentrification sees the ends basically gets knocked down and high rise or more expensive buildings being put up and there's a displacement of the existing community.
Yeah.
And so development always seemed, there was a pattern, development always seemed to be at the expense of us. Now, the effect that it had on us, let's say South Kilburn, if you're from, if you're Habesha, and you have a whole community of Eritreans, Ethiopians in South Kilburn, and your English may not be strong like my mum's, and you may not have access to financial services, you might go into sort of partner system, community banking, silfa in Arabic, where like the community pays into a pot, interest free, and like you pay £100 a month. These sorts of and like that's what you have access to when you're part of a community. You get to buy ingredients. Someone knows how to get like sorrel, or someone knows how to get that spice that you have with your stew, and like that you can't find in Tesco and Asda. Or like you're actually able to use your mother tongue with your neighbors.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that stuff is so important and it keeps people alive, bro. Mm. You display someone, remove them from that network and send them to Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
Who are they speaking to?
It's crazy.
They're alone, fam. Loneliness is one of the biggest killers on earth. So it's detrimental. Mm. It's detrimental to communities.
Yeah. Do you know, I was going to say on the actual point, because in uni, I was actually doing planning.
Yeah.
So there would be like these different developers that would come, whatnot, mainly that were working with the councils and this and that, whatever have you. So it's the like the way that they talk about it and the terminology that they kind of have is like, they build up, like for example, King's Cross, how it was and how it became, and like they were like, it was full of madnesses and
drug use
people and prostitution and the nightlife and this and that. But now we've built it to this kind of thing. And then like even me, like listening to that, you kind of, you wouldn't even think about a community that it's like everything's disposable. Like it's like, so now this part here is all brownfield now. No one really cares about it. We're just going to add something over here on top, and then we just have to knock a few homes down, but we'll have social affordable homes, and you know, some people can, or I think what is it, Abbey Estate, which one was it, the big one?
Yeah, it's just north of King's Cross, Abbey Estate.
Is it Abbey Estate? Yeah. So there was a fat one that they were trying to knock down. I don't know if it was Abbey Estate, but, and they were like, oh, so people can try and buy the new one that's coming in, and this and that, and then they all quickly brush that aside, and then they'll show us how it looks, and everyone's like, this makes sense, you know what I mean, because it's like nicer. They show you the bad,
the 3D models,
they show us like even like old Oak Common in Halsey and stuff like that is getting the way it looked. I was like, yo, this is banging. But then now you think about, bro, how many people are going to be displaced from when it comes in.
Planners, developers, I call them city shapers, people who shape the city. There's an art form in the way that they speak. They're linguists and they're wordsmiths and they're experts on euphemisms. So I will say, this area requires regeneration. What do you mean? To say my block, for example, requires regeneration. Are you mad? Regeneration, as in Genesis, as in you must breathe life into this place. Brother, do you know who's come from my block?
Yeah.
You're telling me that the hood is a place of death?
Yeah.
It's a place of life, my guy.
That's dead, basically. That's what they're saying. Damn. And now it needs
rejuvenation. But look, the state of a building, whether it's neglected or not, that's down to the negligence of the landowner, not the people. Brother, from Rafs alone, how many people have come out of there?
Yeah.
And the creativity. And you're trying to say that this is a place of death.
Yeah.
George the Poet came out of there.
Yeah.
Andre Anderson came out of there. Raheem Sterling came out of there.
Yeah.
That's one block. That's one.
Yeah.
And like, if we look at every other block in London, the amount of celebrated people that come out, and you still have the nerve to say regeneration.
Regeneration, yeah.
Brother, no. We're not doing that.
Yeah. But it's the fact, like, it's that small thing of like dehumanizing everyone that's kind of there in a way that's like, this look, just they'll just put the picture in front of your face, but just look at this. This is how it's going.
This is
look.
The alternative.
This alternative. Yeah. They've got like nice looking buildings and maybe a bit of greenery over here somewhere. But then, like, now deeping it, it's like you get funneled into a system where it's like, then they'll put you on projects to be like, oh, so where else it needs this kind of thing? And then now you're forgetting about communities. You're just kind of like, oh, well, this place here, is it even used like that? Does it need to be? I mean, it could be regentrified, and it's wild.
Fam, the issue with development in London at the moment is that so you have two actors, two players. You've got the state, which is bound by the Nolan principles, which is to do with like integrity and honesty and all of these things. And are meant to act in the interest of the people. And then you have the market, so the private sector, who are there, forget all of the nice words, their bottom line is a return on investment because they borrow money with a promise of a return. So the state has lost the ability to build anything. They lost the ability nearly over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They really haven't built anything substantial since the end of World War II,
yeah.
when the post-housing boom
yeah, yeah.
Happened, which is where a lot of the blocks that we see today, when that's when they were built. And so we're as a country, we're very much reliant on the market.
Yeah.
Now, the market's not trying to serve everyone.
Good, absolutely not.
The market has promised a return on investment. Now, for me to get profit, I'm not looking to... like social housing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm trying to appeal to people with expendable capital. Yeah. Do you get? So I'm gonna build the nice shiny places with rents of 2,200 for a one bed or a two bed, because I am built to do that. The state utilizes that building ability with what they deem as problem areas.
Yeah.
So they will use that power on the ends because there are issues with, you know, the ethnics.
The ethnics.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's high crime here.
Yeah.
What people fail to understand is like, yo, the only reason why you feel like there's high crime here is papers or a narrative will come about, which is very much built on the foundation of a racist ideology.
Yeah.
These lot of savages.
Yeah.
So police, I've said it to many people before, police every morning have a briefing and they look at the local papers, they look at reports and whatnot, and they will attribute crime or undesirable behavior to geographical locations, and the sergeant will come on the board and say, yo, like, we're gonna increase patrols in this area. When they increase patrols, you will always find what you're looking for. Crime happens everywhere, in every corner of London. But Hyde Park has the highest amount of crime.
Yeah.
But no, that place is safe. It's the Royal Gardens. Yeah. What are you talking about? So statistics will be attached to a geographical area. Those statistics will then be used by your politicians, your planners, to say there's high crime here.
Yeah,
we need to regenerate this area because it's a place of death. And we're not going to do it ourselves because we can't afford it. So we're going to use the market.
Yeah.
And the market only appeals to the richest society.
Especially London. Yeah.
So what we're going to do is displace these people who are the problem anyway.
Yeah.
And we're going to create somewhere nice. Because, you know, King's Cross had prostitutes and now it has Google.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
So it's... But how do I know all this stuff? So going back to my story, I was working with George.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bit of a big mouth.
Yeah.
Making a lot of noise. Right next to my block is the Wembley Park, the Wembley Park development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
85 acres of new build, sort of mixed use development. Places for people to live, work and play. I made quite a lot of noise with them, like, I was trying to put an event on my block and I had no money, so I knocked on their door. I said, yo, you don't have money, give me.
Yeah.
So they heard a lot about me. They offered me a job. At the same time, I was reaching the end of my time with George.
Yeah.
And we'd spoken a lot about development, and George said something that stuck with me quite a lot. It stuck with me to this day, which is like, gentrification is one of the biggest threats to the man them. And so, like, it's very much a responsibility for you to understand why it happens and what we can do to prevent it whilst you're sort of in there. Because none of the man them work in development, so we don't really know these things. It's back in 2018. So we lovingly parted ways. And I ended up working for the developer, and I've been working in development, urban development, for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
During my time in development, one of my co-workers, who happened to be one of the only other people from ENDS working in development, was best friends with Andre Anderson.
Okay.
Her name is Naomi Wharton, and I was just like, telling my life story. I was saying, yo, this book changed my life. She was like, I went to school with my man.
Okay, yeah.
I said, please, organize a link, please. And she did.
Yeah,
I linked up with Andre. Obviously, to me, he's an urban myth, bro. Are you mad?
Yeah, full circle.
2015. Now it's 2018. 3 years. I'm like, this guy changed my life.
Yeah.
I meet him and I'm like, yo, nice to meet you. Yeah. And we were talking, and the whole narrative thing really stuck with me. So I said to him, yo, like, my block also experiences sort of mischaracterization.
Yeah.
To this day, 3 years ago, you done authors, and like, on my block, it still hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Situation is the same. Let's do it on my block.
Okay, yeah.
So we did. In October 2019, we released Authors of the Estate, written by Chalkhill Estate. This time we got 22 of my neighbors to come together, write an anthology. And it was a beautiful piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
What that had done in my discussions with Andre and like in my writing, in my part of Authors of the Estate, what that had done is plant the seed for Privatizer Mandem. So this, if you read the Authors of the Estate book, my single chapter is the infant stages of Privatizer Mandem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm exposed to a lot of information at work. In development, I know why development happens, how gentrification happens, and my solution was very, very simple. In a one line, the ends can't be sold if they don't own it anymore,
mm-hmm.
and the people who own it is the state. So how can we take ownership of the ends from the state? Now that comes with so many more questions, like how should we do this? Why would we do this?
Mm-hmm.
And what problems come with it? So I had to do a lot of soul searching.
Yeah.
Why did I care so much about preserving ends? Especially when like, cool, the narratives are one thing. Let's not romanticize ends. Violence does happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to really tell myself, yo, like, the benefits and the beauty of ends definitely outweighs any negativity that comes out of it. And who's to say the negativity can't be worked on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Why do we need to demolish everything and start again and then replace with new people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't make sense. Like, if I value my neighbors, if I value my people, so much, I would want to work on stuff. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I thought, I'm exposed to all this legislation at work. How do I
counter that?
The freehold of the estate. The freehold means absolute ownership.
Oh, freehold that. Yeah.
Brother, I'm not playing. So it's so the book I really split it into three parts. The first part is a description of the situation we're in, the sort of state market situation and how we're affected as people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Touches a little bit around the narratives that's being circulated about us and the power that we have as a community. I very much emphasize the fact that we have the biggest amount of cultural and social capital in Britain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not a joke, fam. Mm. Everything we make is pure gold.
Yeah.
And like, we're able to make money out of thin air.
Yeah.
Give me £70 for a studio session, I'll make you a million.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And that's just music.
Yeah, even clothes.
Clothes.
Yeah.
Brother, fam, Clint has like white youths in France running through
New
Paris.
Yorkers. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Madness.
It's crazy. Like, all of our fashion houses, all of our music, even our literature, Murky Books and like authors like Yomi and authors like George, authors like Kelechi, like, we've got amazing authors.
Yeah.
And then podcasting. Another media form, there's you, man, and we've got a whole bubbling scene. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So we're able to, we've got the labor.
Yeah.
We've got the creativeness. Mm-hmm. We've got the capital as well.
Mm.
Because with the labor, with all these media forms, we're able to make bread.
Yeah.
The only thing missing is land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I read a lot of Marx. I'm not a communist.
Yeah.
But like in Marx's ideology, it's land plus labor plus capital equals the means of production. If you own the means of production,
mm-hmm.
you run the economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only production, what do you mean in that sense?
Productivity.
Mm.
So product.
Yeah.
It's a high level concept,
yeah.
but it's basically GDP, gross domestic product.
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
So let's take the example of music. Mm. The capital is like the microphones,
yeah.
the cameras, the computers,
yeah, that, softwares, all yeah, that, kind of
that
stuff,
capital yeah. you put in to get the equipment. Labor is the talent.
Yeah.
Your sound engineer, your musicians.
Mm.
The land is whose room are you doing it in?
Yeah. Mm.
You technically don't own the means of production. You're the labor,
yeah,
and you invest the capital, but someone else, the landowner, benefits.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot more weight on land in the equation of understanding who owns the means of production. Mm. It really is the landowner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if I own a building, I dictate what happens in it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
If I own a building, I could see. I could see ways about getting Trapstar to run their thing in my building.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like these times we can keep money circulating within our communities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if I know iCity is renting out studio space, I'll just build a studio.
Yeah.
I will keep my ICE can come here, base themselves here, and they can make music and have it, again, mm-hmm. circulate capital ends, yeah. within our circles. And the more capital we circulate within our communities, the more the state's going to look at us like, yo, you lot are holding bare capital.
Mm.
And like, the economy is very much dictated by you lot,
yeah.
because you have purchasing power. So let's talk.
Yeah.
Let's collaborate. Now us, if we're smart, sure, we'll talk, we'll come to the table,
mm.
but you got to change a couple things.
Yeah.
I don't like the way your police deal with us.
Mm.
So I'm going to introduce this white paper. We're going to legislate different ways for people to be policed,
mm.
for example. Or I don't like the way you're talking about flipping migrants.
Yeah.
About stop the boats. No. If you want to talk with us,
yeah,
here's another white paper.
Yeah,
change your foreign policy. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, because like, capital talks.
Right,
it's the biggest thing. The
this is what
got.
This country worships.
Yeah,
and the landowner is the one who owns the means of production.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I guess I disagree with Marx, which is a big statement to make. People yeah. are gonna slew me,
yeah.
but like, it really is the landowner
yeah.
who owns the means. Privatized random is how we own land.
Mm.
Not any land. The land that we grew up on.
Yeah.
The land that we've, that our communities.
That's your home.
Yeah. Do you get it? Because when we say home, like some people say, Britain ain't home for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going back to Nigeria.
Mm.
Or I'm going back to Jamaica. Or I'm going back to Iraq. Yeah. That's home for me.
Mm.
I know we go there, bro. What do they say?
Nah, they just know you're
a Brit, fam. We talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get what I mean, bro? Oh,
they can tell.
They're looking
by the
at
walk.
You like.
Even Somali before yeah. I went, and he was like, "Yo," before I went, I was like, "Yo, what's good? What's that?"
Yeah.
He's like, "Bro, they'll tell you from a mile away, innit,
fam."
The I walk, went there. I was like,
they will tell you where in London you're from, bro.
Yeah.
So
they're like, "I heard your aunt was dead."
Yeah, they know about.
But still send us money.
But there's an uncomfortable reality that we need to accept.
Mm.
Like, yo, we're actually Brits.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And so like, yeah,
with our home is, which isn't bad, which isn't a bad thing.
it is because largely, and I'll say this with confidence, mm-hmm. like Britain don't love you.
Yeah.
It don't love you, bro. And it's a negligent relationship that I'm in. Mm-hmm. It's toxic.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you know what I mean?
When I say it isn't a bad thing, I'm talking more from the perspective of there's a lot worse places you could be, you know?
100, but then do we want to get into a conversation as to why certain places are worse off?
No.
Because I can rewind 500 years and we can talk about it.
That's another episode there. But. Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of potential that comes with being landowners. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried to simplify, I told you, city shapers are wordsmiths. Mm. They thrive on euphemisms and different linguistic techniques to throw people off. Mm-hmm. I've just translated it into a language that we can all speak.
Yeah.
I've written it for my people. I was going back to the book, like the second third is the blueprint, is how.
Yeah. Mm.
It's a simple four-phase process. You round up the mandem, you plot the move. What was the third one? It was...
I got it in my notes.
Is it you...
Taking over.
Taking over. And the fourth one is cleaning up.
Yeah.
And like, these are all phrases that we know anyway, but like... I've explained I've translated legislation. I've identified what we would have to use. I even put it out on a diagram with a timeline.
I like the graphics in the book. As a graphic designer.
Took me forever, bro. Fuck. I did it on PowerPoint.
Yeah?
I swear down.
It's another thing I was going to ask, but yeah, go ahead.
Nah, so on the graphic design, I only did the timeline on PowerPoint, but the whole book was designed by Andre. So Andre Anderson is the one who
I'm talking about like the pictures, some of like the little pictures of the blocks.
Oh yeah.
Like the blue dot, like the blue circles, and then how they would translate into the next page. I like that kind of stuff.
So the photos and the books I took on a film camera.
Nice.
And the blue dots and the typography, that was all Andre.
I like the way they like work together and continue the story. Like it was a very nice, malleable experience, you know?
But even the blue, like everything is an intentional design choice. Mm-hmm. Blue, because it's like a blueprint. And like even this typeface, mm-hmm. it's very much like San Andreas.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it, things that are, there's artifacts of like our experience growing up in this.
Mm-hmm.
And the final part of the book is like the consequences of what could happen if we own land.
Mm-hmm.
And I even got a deck of cards, which sort of further explores the potential of what could come if the mandem were to own the ends.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, man, I've been monologuing. This is meant to be a podcast.
No. That's what you asked about the book and about yourself, of course. Cool. So I think the idea is beautiful, but people are going to ask, How can you incorporate it? Do you know of any situations where it actually bloomed? As one thing, like towards the end of the book, you said that the mandem need to make peace with it might not come in our lifetime, you know.
Yeah.
Which is as I was reading, I was like, yo, I'm gonna do this tomorrow, bro. But yeah, that's something like in my head, like even things like the podcast space, for example. Mm-hmm. Like we've been doing this podcasting since 2017.
Yeah,
like on and off. And like, the biggest struggle for us was studio space. Like obviously we started like in our yards with like basic microphones and that, and then we tried like getting into a nice studio. We got nice though. One time in East London, we met a producer and he literally did it for free for us in a nice studio for a good year and a half or two. And then we struggled for a while, and then now we're here in Southwestish. So like for me, like I always think about like when I like really make it in my head. Like I want to create a space for people to be able to come and do these kind of things for free, do like learn graphic design for free, like be able to record podcasts, like do whatever they want in that space. So that's always been in my head, and like I'm like working towards it slowly, you know. So, but yeah, like in your view, how do you see it going? There's also another thing for me.
Yeah.
So like, I consider myself from the ends anyway. Like, I'm in and around the estates, yeah, but I've never lived in an estate, you know? Because like, we like, especially with a lot of immigrant families, they're moving from temporary accommodation. With the way things are now. Like, a lot of them have the experience of people in the box, but then they get dropped into random neighborhoods where there might be some white people there, there might be some, like, there might be a lot of culture and there might be a lack of culture. So it's a very, I feel like the experience is different for everyone, you know?
Yeah, no.
So, like, for you, how do you see it going? And do you know of any places that have done it, like, well?
One of the only places I could say has done it something like this is Stamford Hill. Like, the Jewish community,
that's true,
they've
locked it down,
they've done it. They have their own police, their own ambulances. They've created a city for themselves in Stamford Hill, which is beautiful to see.
You know what's funny, that's when I landed in London. I was born in Kenya, so I landed here and I was free. I got dropped into a temporary yard in Stamford Hill, like straight, like, I was around their Jews, like, from young. It was weird.
And they're able, because they own the land, they're able to dictate what happens and address the needs of their community. And if you're a Jewish person in, let's say, Southeast London, and you know that in Stamford Hill there are services and infrastructures there specifically for your community, you're going to draw in those people. So like, imagine in South London, in Brixton, the Jamaican community come together, or the Caribbean community come together, all the little islands, and they all hold a certain section of Brixton. They own the land. It will attract a lot more Caribbean people if the services there are suited for the people. I think it's important for us to understand who we are and what we need in order to do that. It's so in terms of the book, I do say most likely you're gonna die before this happens, which is important because I don't want to lie to people. We live in a time where people sort of instant gratification, everyone wants things done tomorrow, and it doesn't work like that. All the greatest things happen long after. If someone has as an idea, it'll get action after they die, 9 times out of 10. So it's important that people understand. You're going to put in this work. It's not really for you. It's for your kids. It's for your neighbors. It's for the people who you value. And if you can make peace with that now, then
possibilities are endless in that regard.
It's endless. And the way you move is a little bit different as well, where like, there is no real personal gain.
It's
just a sacrifice, isn't it?
It's purely a sacrifice. It's purely motivated by love. I love my neighbors. I feel like I want to protect and preserve them.
Also, even like for your children, having a place that they can stay, you know?
Imagine dying knowing that your children don't need to worry about rent. Do you know what I mean?
Or dying knowing the complete opposite is occurring, what would you prefer is the question.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of work. I personally don't see any block being privatized immediately. I think there's a lot of work we need to do collectively. For the next maybe 5-10 years, I just need to work on pushing out the idea. It needs to be something normal that we talk about. Like, oh yeah, what, them man, they're privatized, good for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, we need to get familiar first with the idea of land ownership, because most people, that's not even on our radar.
That's exactly what I was going to talk about as well. Like, for example, you mentioned the lady Dora Botema, like, the work that she done. And like, a lot of moms, like you said, working 2 jobs and all this, like, how do you find time and the energy to push? And obviously, like you said, knowing that it's not for you, it's for the future generations, you can be a bit more at peace in that regard.
Do you know what Dora did? So for some of the listeners who don't know, Dora Baltimore from Angeltown, Brixton, she fought to have the views of the Angeltown residents heard with the changes that were happening in Angeltown. Now, the most compelling thing she said, yeah, is we have ideas. Don't come and show us what you think should happen. Chat to us. There's an audacity that she has that, you know, we're the residents here. Yeah. This place that you're trying to change should be shaped in accordance to our imagination, which is a mad thing to say because the older we get, the less we imagine, the less we dream. And it sounds like a soft, fluffy thing to say, like, oh, you know, you can imagine a future. Nah, for real, bro. When we say, like, imagine a future, I literally mean, like, yo, I want this building to be here. I want a park to be here. That's imagining. That's dreaming up what can happen. And your motivators are like, yo, because I know Auntie Jenny likes to feed the ducks in the morning and the lake over there is da-da-da, so I'm going to put a bench. That's imagining. That's dreaming. The first step to anything is like you imagine and dream something, then you design it, and then you implement it. Design is you designate. So it's like, okay, I have this dream, this ambition of like my block being more suited for the Somali mums there because they're homesick and I want the facades of the buildings to be more reflective of Somali architecture. That's my dream. And then you have to design it. So I'm going to need to pull out the papers. I need to pull out plans. I need to chat to an architect in Somalia who is the best in the field. I'm going to get him to redesign this building. And then you implement it. Like it's, but to even get to the stage of like, do I have the right to imagine? Do I have the right to dream? You lose it. You lose it by the time you're like 18.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, no, because I mean, I'll be honest, even for my sake, I would never even think of like, oh, let me change it to my taste or to our taste. It's just kind of, if they do this thing over here, then I guess they've just done it.
That was another thing. So Maslow's hierarchy of needs, so you talked about that. So like the whole idea of like we need stability first before.
Before you can even think of it. If I have a house I can stay in, I'm all right now. Okay, cool. Let me get a job, let alone thinking of, because I feel like even when you say like freehold, that sounds like, just to me, like sounds a very daunting task. You know what I mean? I'm like, freehold, but that's not even like lease. That's like, how do we even get there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then you'd have to like proper speak to actual people that actually own this bit of property, you know, and then after that it's like, and you know what I mean, to me it sounds, that's why
it's not easy, bro. Like this is what I mean, we're not there yet. Today, February 2024, we're not there yet. That doesn't mean we can't get there, and a lot of people, do you know what I've experienced, a lot of people will read it and they're motivated, they're like, yeah, come, let's do it tomorrow. Like, bro, relax. For real, chill. Because A, you're going to disappoint yourself. And B, you need to understand, it's going to sound rude, but it's not about you. It really isn't. Like, you may have the motivation. Does your neighbor know about this?
Because what does it mean to them?
Like, the first step in the chapter, Run the Block, which is the blueprint of how the first thing is to round up the mandem. You haven't even done that yet. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then later on, you need building surveyors. You need solicitors. Like, you are one cog in a machine or massive in a process that has to sort of be ready for this big move to happen. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be quick. So it's more right now, just communicate it. The book lays out what needs to happen, when, and most importantly, who. So
some people will read it, they're architects. They will then set up their career in a way where it's like, when the time is right and the man them approach me, I can do whatever.
Mm.
They'll be, bro, I've spoken to building surveyors. I'm like, cool. I'm going to work in the industry for a bit, get enough experience. And then if any of the man them are looking to implement this, connect me with them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Bro, I know venture capitalists. I know money men that are saying, yo, like, if there's investment and the man need investment, just connect me with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at first, for the next 5-10 years, it's building that network. It's building, making sure that this is within the consciousness of our people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when enough of us have the knowledge to implement this, that's when we can maybe see within our lifetimes the purchasing of one building.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Because if one block gets bought by the man them, it's a domino effect after that.
Yeah.
Second building comes, third building. What, the man did the art. Can Snow. I speak to you? Can you tell me how you did it?
Yeah.
And it becomes its own self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
So all this really is, the book is just like a mission.
Yeah.
It's a North Star. And like if we're all interested and if we all value the same things, we can all face in this direction, which the book is trying to direct us to.
Mm-hmm.
If it's worth its salt and if it's rooted in the sort of the mutual benefit to the man them, then naturally everyone will face this way. If not, then it was a nice idea. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an attempt.
Yeah.
But I firmly believe that we all have our collective interests at heart. I know that because I chill with a man every day.
Mm.
Like I was raised by the man.
Mm-hmm.
My English was taught, my culture, everything comes from ends. I know us well enough
mm-hmm.
to, this might be accepted. And the way it's written, it's easy for us to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that answers your question. Does that answer your question or was I walking?
No. I think that does answer my question.
Okay.
No, I was just going to say one thing. Because I think, obviously, even the first part that you kicked off with, which is rounding up the mandem, I think I just basically kind of wanted to, I guess, break it down further in terms of, like, why is it in our best interest to actually... to actually do this, because I think if you had like a large gathering of people, I think if maybe a lot of them would probably be like, well, I don't really want to live here all my life. I so then that about, that yeah. dwindles down some and then some might be like, yeah, well, but I'm not really from the ends, and then that dwindles down some more. But like for the people at large, kind of why would this be the move to make if you were to round up the mandem, basically?
So the first part of the book touches on this.
Yeah.
And there's a harsh reality to this whole thing. Like, bro, for some people, there's too much hood politics for me to stay in ends.
Yeah.
Like, it might actually be too dangerous for you.
Yeah.
So you might actually just have to leave.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you may not necessarily be able to invest your...
Because some people might want to make it to actually move out of...
Is that making it?
No, I mean, like, that's how they would sort of see it in terms of, like,
so that's a narrative.
Success, yeah.
People see success as moving out of ends.
Mm.
My question has always been, is that success?
Mm.
A lot of people don't, like, they don't go and interrogate or scrutinize their ideas of what success is.
Mm.
Now, for me, yeah, if I was to move out of Chalk Hill and live in, let's say, West Hampstead, is that a success?
I think the majority of people probably say yeah.
See. So what's successful about it? Because all my brethren are still in Chalk Hill.
Yeah.
I'd be lucky to find salt and pepper when I'm cooking my food. So I'll probably have to travel back to Northwest.
Yeah.
To get my ingredients for food. My neighbors are of a particular social class and may have a worldview that's not aligned with mine. I will most likely be I'll most likely be unwelcomed. Like how when I went to college in Harrow, it's like, oh,
no, you're here.
You're here. Is that success? The grass may not always be greener on the other side. It's greener where you water it. I very much see success as if my village contributed to me as a person, success is me contributing to my village, whatever that may look like. Again, for some people, they have to move. Doesn't mean they stop contributing to their village. So for some people, if the village's mission is to privatize, but you can't necessarily be there to buy one of the blocks, cool. I'll contribute my skills. I'm an engineer and I can give pro bono support to my village in their mission. That's a contribution. It might be an investment. I did so well working out in the Middle East. I've got hundreds of thousands. I can put a little fund aside for my people because I don't need the money. For example, I'm just good at networking. So like, I know my man, and I know my man. I can bring people together. In fact, I'm going to hold a little dinner once a month with my block, just so that we can work things out. And create a space for us to organize and privatize. That's a contribution. That to me is success. I don't see leaving my village as success, because we always tend to run back to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you know what's funny? I see like a lot of these rappers that like move out of there, and I see them coming back to their areas, and then they're like, their mom is still there a lot of the time as well. Like, what are you doing? What time is it?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of reasons as to why people move out. The primary reason is we've adopted someone else's idea of what success is. It's understandable why people will say, yo, as soon as I make money, I'm out of the ends. I'm taking my mom out of the hood. Do you know what? I used to say that. And it was my mom who changed my mind. Like, bro, I swear. It was my mom that said, yo, that's not success for me. I love where I live. Why would I leave? And it made me question, because like, what are you talking about? Like, everyone knows. Leaving ends is success. She's like, why? All my friends are here. So like, I think we need to scrutinize.
I think kind of how you mentioned now, I don't think the flip side is ever mentioned, because I think it's always success is move out. I think you're probably the first person that said to me, actually, it's not the other way.
You know, it's mad, a lot of the time as well. You're an immigrant. Your family like moved their whole lives here. And now after 20 years of settling here, you're asking them to move their whole lives somewhere else. Like, you're doing like displacement yourself.
But I think also it is a very kind of personal thing. I think, but it comes a lot of to, I think it will also come down to a lot of how the sentiment of that person has towards their area.
100%.
If they've, I feel like you've kind of, your progressive years, you're kind of like, what's the word? I was saying all day, but I forgot now. But your formative years were in Chalk Hill.
Chalk Hill,
Whereas some people might not have been.
They
might have been around. Displaced, moved about, temporary accommodations all over Gap. So it's kind of like, they don't really have a community to kind of sort out, you know?
To claim themselves.
To claim, exactly.
No, I agree. And also, I'll keep it above you, my bro. I know a lot of people that have lost a lot to the ends. A lot. Now, I don't want to come across like I'm romanticizing ends. Like, there are some ugly aspects to it. But then again, I'm going back to the point of like, in the scale of like the beauty it provides and the ugliness it has, is very much weighted on the other side.
Yeah.
But for some people who may have lost a sibling, who may have lost a parent, it's too difficult. And they themselves have very complex relationships with ends, where like, yo, I lost my sibling to ends. But like, my best friend is from the same block. So we have to deal with that. And it's messy. It's not black and white.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, some of my closest friends growing up, they're from the up block. And like, war. War has taken place. But I love my friend. Do you get what I mean? He's not involved, but war. So what's my relationship like with that block? Like, there's complex things. There's uncomfortable discussions we're going to have to have. We're going to need to squash some things. We're going to need to address some things. We're going to need to repair some things. And like, but that's part of human life. It's chaos, bro. Like, it's never been a clean, sterile process.
Of course.
And so, there wouldn't be life without it.
All change, you know?
100%.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to close it down at this point. Sorry, we're having a good discussion. It's been lovely. And really appreciate you coming on. No, make sure everyone grab the book, Privatize the Mandem.
Thank you.
And build a little Kinani.
My bro, yep.
Yeah. I'll put the book in the description. And why not have you on for another longer discussion?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
If you're willing to travel.
I'll take a Uber next time. Boy, yeah. I'm not cycling here again.
Yeah, really appreciate you coming on, man.
I love. Yeah, I appreciate you guys, man.
Anytime, bro.
Thanks everyone for listening, and check out the book and dream big. Thank you for listening.
Keep moving, keep growing, keep learning. See you at work.